A dental assistant was accused of sexually assaulting a patient.
But it was a study in science that helped prove his innocence.
For days, thousands have tried to register. There are millions without a dentist.
NHS patients, so that's over in England, what's going on over there with patients not being able to get treatment. The lines are out the door and people are doing their own dentistry. Like, they're literally pulling their own teeth.
Facebook groups in dental.
There's a lot of great information. I get information from Facebook groups all the time. That I just perspectives that I don't think through, things like areas that I just don't know a lot about in the dental industry.
But the problem is too, is it is so emotionally driven and opinion related.
Back to another episode of Dental Rift. I'm your co-host, Gary Bird. I'm the founder of SMC National, where we help you create, convert, and close more new patients so you can grow the way that you want.
I am Tanner Applegate, CEO and founder of Unify. We are a single sign-on and password manager for the dental industry to make your guys' team secure and more efficient.
Awesome, man. So this is going to be an interesting one today because we got some really hot topics. Really, these are some very, very unique topics, actually. So number one is NHS patients, so that's over in England, absolutely meltdown with what's going on over there with patients not being able to get treatment. And because of the government healthcare, basically like Medicaid over there, right? And the lines are out the door and people are doing their own dentistry. Like, they're literally pulling their own teeth and doing stuff like that. So very, very interesting. And then there was a dental assistant was accused of sexually assaulting a patient. And then this crazy curveball happened, and I'll share the news story on that. And then lastly, we're going to talk about Facebook groups in dental, which I think is a spicy topic. So which topic you want to tackle first?
Let's go with the one that you mentioned first.
Okay, the NHS patients. All right, I want you to check this out.
Well, while the politicians trade jibes, people in Bristol have been queuing round the block for a third day after a new dentist opened its doors to NHS patients. That came as the government announced plans to spend £200 million on payments to dentists who treat NHS patients in England. That will go towards funding 2.5 million new NHS appointments. Now, the government had a lukewarm response from the British Dental Association, which says the system in England is slipping back into a Victorian era, with some people resorting to DIY dentistry. Now, this graph will show us how hard some adults are finding it to get treatment. These are figures from NHS England, and we're looking at the percentage of adults who have seen an NHS dentist in the last 2 years. In 2018, about half of all people had seen their dentist, but COVID kept many patients away during 2020, and the backlog built up. And thousands of dentists decided to stop treating NHS patients. Nearly 2 years later, only 41% of patients had seen their dentist within 2 years, meaning nearly two-thirds of adults are going private or missing out on treatment altogether. Here's Simeon Brown.
This is my life. I can't smile anymore.
Now that Caroline's reflection has changed, facing the mirror is an ordeal. Caroline's dentist joined the exodus of providers leaving the NHS to go private.
I've lost all the...
Now the earliest appointment offered from her nearest NHS dentist is in 3 years.
Bro, 3 years. 3 years. That's as soon as we can get you in. If everything works out good.
I've been told no.
What was that?
I can't be accepted. 3 years waiting list. I've rang everybody in the area. It got so painful. It got so painful and so rubbish. I just started pulling them out.
200 miles away, this is not the queue for a Beyonce concert, but the opening of an NHS dentist in Bristol. For days, thousands have tried to register before it stopped accepting new patients. Right across the country, there are millions without a dentist, and the government is being forced to act. It currently spends £3 billion a year on NHS dentistry. Today's announcement has promised an extra £200 million of funding to get more patients through dentist doors and a £20,000 one-off golden hello payment to attract new NHS dentists to areas in need. But the British Dental Association say the money does not add up, as in real terms, the budget is still down £1 billion since 2010.
We've got gaping wounds in the NHS dental service, and we're getting some plasters to stick on those gaping wounds. That isn't going to be enough to actually turn this around.
So will a £20,000 golden hello mean more dentists taking up NHS positions?
In areas that have...
I don't know what I think I know what a 20,000 golden pound hello is, but that's a great marketing.
That have previously tried this, it hasn't been successful. It wasn't increasing the number of people working in the NHS, it was actually just moving a cohort of dentists around who were actually being incentivized by that amount of money.
The NHS will now give dentists up to £50 for each new patient they accept. What they can earn in the private sector still far exceeds the amount from the NHS. So can the government's plans stop dentists abandoning the health service?
This is a really ambitious plan, but it's also a plan in which we have complete confidence. We have a plan for dentistry and for dental recovery, and that plan will offer up to 2.5 million more appointments, but also the long-term preventative work.
But the consequences of that plan not working means further challenges on other parts of the NHS.
Those desperately trying to access urgent dental care are increasingly turning to A&D. And this is a service that is already under substantial pressure, and all of this is forcing the government to take action.
Hey, got an important announcement for you. We are hosting the second annual Full Arch Advantage event where you learn to create, convert, and close more full arches so your office can grow the way that you want. This is going to be in partnership with BioHorizons, and this is our second year, but the important part is it's going to be virtual, so you don't have to fly out, buy hotels, travel with your team. You can just register and block off the days and watch virtually. And right now we have early bird pricing. It's never going to be cheaper than right now. I don't even have a discount code because it's so cheap. It's only $199 right now to register, and it's for your team. It's for your dentists, it's for your treatment coordinators, your dental assistants, and your marketing managers, and you're going to learn a ton of stuff to grow. Last year's event had a 74 MPS score, which is amazing, and the feedback was really, really good. So if you're looking at leveling up, we have a ton of new content, a ton of new automations and things that you can add to your practice to really grow. And we're going to be going over a lot around sales and executing on the phones to make sure that you can grow the way that you want. So don't miss this. Go to Full Arch Advantage right now and sign up. This price will not be around for long. So just to recap, basically the government's involved with the healthcare there in a major, major way, right? And the wait times have just gotten out of hand. The dentists can't take them. I've actually talked to a couple of dentists from that part of the world, and a lot of them are just going like full private, just cash. Mm-hmm. And it's like so broken, like the whole thing's broken. And I'm worried, like what concerns me when I see stuff like this, I'm always so worried that America is going to turn into that and just remove the opportunity for people to be healthy. And so anyways, what are your thoughts when you see that, Tanner? There's so many things there.
Yeah. I honestly, it's a broken system. And I think that it's because it's so broken and it's based off of the political side of things, it's never going to go anywhere. I think it's just going to remain broken, honestly. And because it doesn't make sense for a dentist to do it. Like, I've talked to a lot of them too, as we talked through like the financials of it, like their increase in costs obviously doesn't mean that there's an increase in budget for this NHS. So they're not getting paid anymore to do any more dentistry. And there's honestly, like, based off of how they're reimbursed off of like what you call units, right? And so it's almost like going in and doing a filling is considered a unit. And this is not like gospel, so don't quote me on this, right?
Yeah.
But doing a filling is considered a unit, whereas like doing a crown is a unit. So why would I go in and do a crown when I have an increased cost of crown? I could just go in and do a filling, right? And so like, they're really hoping that like the best work that should be done is done by this guy that's not getting incentivized to actually do what should be best.
Yeah, they don't make, it's not even about incentives either. I mean, you have to incentivize the in person, but it's about actually the cost of it, right? Like you can't afford to see these patients. That's why the whole system's breaking. There's and this is why like Medicaid doesn't work for adults in a lot of states, where because it doesn't make sense to take adults Medicaid, mm-hmm. right? Because it's just like business wise, it's impossible to make work. So do you think this spills over into America, or what are the learning? Like, what are your thoughts on Medicaid in America versus NHS? Are they not related at all, or is there?
They're not related at all. I mean, if you look at the private sector in England, it is completely different than the private sector in the US, right? So we think about private, we think, oh, these are PPOs that they're going out and rolling out. And the reality is, no, it's like really a better equivalent to it is like they're rolling out these membership plans, right? And so they're selling membership plans to people to cover dental. And these membership plans have relationships with offices. That's kind of more of what's happening in England and less of what's happening here. And so we have such a long rooted history with private insurances that are true insurances that it's not going to replicate because of the fact that like it is a for-profit organization. And I think there is definitely work that still needs to be done in the healthcare, I mean, in the dental sector within the United States, but it's not nearly as broken as like the public issues with it.
Huge issue though, huge issue. And I hope it doesn't get to that point here in the States. All right. So this one I want to share with you, Tanner, is a different story. This is about a dental assistant who was charged with, or who was accused of sexual assault, but that's not it. There's a huge curveball here that I think is going to blow your mind. And this was in Florida.
It's always in Florida.
It's always in Florida.
He's a dental surgical assistant in Tampa Bay, but his world was turned upside down 4 years ago when a patient accused him of sexual battery. Edwin Alves would eventually fight those charges, but it was a study in science that helped prove his innocence. Fox 13's Gloria Gomez tonight shows us the evidence that got the jury's attention.
Edwin Alves has lived under a cloud of suspicion for 4 years, but not anymore.
I was crying, yes. I couldn't hold it. I wanted to jump and scream and run out of that courtroom like crazy, like, yes.
A week ago, a Pasco County jury found him not guilty of sexual battery. He says it took a lot of prayers, good science, and one heck of a lawyer.
Man, he cares, like, he's passionate.
Edwin's troubles began at the Tampa Bay Institute of Oral Surgery and Dental Implants, where he worked as a dental assistant. In December of 2019, an 18-year-old patient accused him of sexual battery while she was under conscious sedation for a dental procedure. His DNA was found on her chest area. Edwin was arrested, charged, and thrown in jail. He knew he was innocent, but no one would listen.
Right. My seconds of life on my own.
Edwin's lawyer, Bjorn Brunvand, said there was a simple explanation why his client's DNA was found on the accuser. Before the procedure, Edwin put sticky patches called leads on her chest area to monitor her heart activity. It's common practice not to wear gloves because the leads stick to them.
When that's happening, his DNA is going to touch the skin of the patient.
But the startling revelation came when the defense explained to the jury the cocktail of anesthetic drugs involved in consciousness sedation can cause wild hallucinations about sexual fantasies, even sexual assault.
It's a well-understood phenomenon and it's well-documented.
Dr. Aya Almoberger is a clinical pharmacologist who testified there are proven studies on this issue.
So the benzodiazepines, the nitrous oxide or the laughing gas, and then the propofol are typically your main culprits for sexual-oriented hallucinations.
Prosecutors really didn't have an answer for the compelling evidence, and they didn't rattle Edwin on the stand either.
If you don't have nothing to hide, you're not super crazy nervous.
3 hours later, a not guilty verdict. Edwin would get to go home and hug his wife and kids and begin to pick up the pieces of his...
That one gives me chills because that could have been in jail. He has a family. He has kids. Could have went to jail for a long time. And DNA on the chest.
That stuff in general scares me. I've always been, there's always been this like cautious, like security around like being alone in general with other people. It's like, you got to make sure you're covering your bases because you don't ever know what could happen.
100%. Yep. I'm the same way. Same exact way. I normally these stories don't end well, right? And a lot of times we share it and it's like, hey, crazy people. But this one was very interesting about the drugs. Did you know that about the drugs?
I knew that they were definitely lead to a lot of negative reactions in general. And maybe not specifically about the sexual assault hallucinations or not. But yeah. I mean, I could also see it being, we cover enough crazy stories where I could see it being where it wasn't fake, right? And that actually did happen.
Yeah.
So, I definitely see the need for protection on both sides. So
how do you protect against that? Cause do you put cameras in there in the surgery? Like
from a camera perspective, I don't think it's a terrible thing. You can get HIPAA compliant cameras, but I also think if that were my 18-year-old daughter going in, like I'm going to be there.
You're going to be in the surgery room.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. See, and I am always like, I think people just trust doctors, right? Like doctors. And I know it's like, okay, you can't just trust doctors, but since we were kids, right? Like, remember when you used to in gym, they do the physicals, like drop your pants. Like that was normal. Like that's just what you did when whatever the doctor said, you kind of did it and flowed with it. And you had no one explained it to me. No one said, hey, this is what's going to happen when you walk in here in this line in gym class. It was just like, you just kind of get in line and people were kind of chuckling about it. And I can only imagine if that's a male doctor with a male student, but imagine a male doctor, dental assistant or whoever, with a female too, it just even more so.
Yeah. It's scary for sure.
All right. So let's talk about Facebook groups, in dental specifically.
I was bringing these up. I was chatting with somebody about this recently where the social outlet for dentists used to be Dental Town. Were you ever there on Dental Town or was that prior to you?
That's a little bit before me. But yeah, I've heard crazy stories.
So Dental Town used to be this forum where like every dentist hung out. This was back in like, honestly, early 2010s it started shutting down when I started in like 2015. So I actually kind of got my career going because of Dental Town. I found a group that kind of influenced my decision in like not going to dental school. And then like in these like mid 2010s, it started shifting like Facebook groups. Right. And so from what's interesting to me about this perspective is that it is very highly educative for sure. Right there. You can get a lot of good content out of it. But the problem is too, is it is so emotionally driven and opinion related that it's almost like the person with the loudest voice is the one that gets listened to, not the one that's got the best information. So I'm curious from your perspective, being an outsider because you're observing, you're pretty active in these Facebook groups. What are your thoughts on them?
They're extremely, like in a lot of cases, they're extremely toxic. So there's a lot of preconceived notions that people just buy into and then accept them. And so what I find interesting is like the single practice locations are the most vocal. And then like the group practices are less and less vocal. And the bigger they get, the less vocal they are in these groups, right? And then understandably so. And so you have a huge undertone of like anti-DSO, anti-group, anti, they call it corporate dentistry. But what's interesting is a lot of those people in a lot of those groups have added associates. They've added locations. They're still anti like big corporate dentistry, but they're growing themselves. I find that fascinating. And that's kind of my journey into dental too, was when I first started working with dentists, I was told with no questions that DSOs are the devil, period. And I was like, oh, okay, DSOs are the devil, I guess so. And then over time, all those practices that taught me that and told me that, they all turned into groups and they all sold to DSOs as well. I find that fascinating. But so yeah, it's very, very interesting. It's just like anything else though. You have to take it with a grain of salt, right? So I have a video right now. It's going viral. It has almost 2 million views on it. And half the comments are very negative. And I think that's just the nature of social media, because people are negative and they don't have a vent for that. So they just go, what's the downside of leaving a stupid comment for someone? There's very little downside. Like there's almost no downside just leaving a wild comment, even if they know your name. Like it's just like big deal. What is that in a Facebook group? If I'm a single location dentist and I'm just absolutely wild talking out there, what's the downside of that? It's almost nothing. And so people are going to hit you with a lot of negativity. And if you're going to be on social media, you got to be prepared for that. If you're going to do anything at size or at scale. I also say that there's a lot of good stuff on there too. There's a lot of good people and good groups that really try to keep them clean and positive. And there's a lot of great information. I get information from Facebook groups all the time that I just perspectives that I don't think through, things like areas that I just don't know a lot about in the dental industry. So that's kind of my breakdown of it.
Interesting. I agree with that. And I got to a point where, as a DSO, I hated sifting through that crap to get to the good, that I just gave up and stopped getting the good out of it too.
Yeah. I think a lot of people get there. Yeah. And there's no, for a DSO, let's say you have 10 or 20 practices, there's almost no upside to posting in those groups, right? Like, cause what's the upside? It's only can turn into a PR nightmare or a, you know, employees don't want to go work with you, or people don't want to invest money with you, or platforms don't want to work with you, or vendors, you know, stay away from whatever, right? There's all these downsides to being active in those groups if you are a bigger group. And when I say bigger, that's a relative term. But
our group, what was interesting though, is that our group in New York was very active in social media and actually played really well to our benefit when it came to recruiting. We never had any issue getting doctors or team members because we had a great online reputation and people could come in and check us out and see that. But what was interesting though, was that my partner's spouse, wife, she was literally for her job, she was an executive at this giant New York PR firm. So she would always give him insights of like, hey, you got to stop posting these things or do this thing well, where she helped us kind of curate that online image. But we saw a huge upside from it from a business operations perspective. Granted, we weren't in these Facebook groups. These were our own images.
Yeah. So this is that your outward projection is much different than an uncontrolled environment like a Facebook group. And I find that interesting too, because I think you're spot on. For me, like one of the biggest things of building out my personal brand is I can just post one time and say, hey, I need XYZ of whatever. And then I get 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 people saying, think about this or use this or hire them or let me tag people here. And that's extremely useful, like really, really useful. Yeah. And I think in dental, it's even amplified even more. Awesome, man. Good episode. I'll talk to you. Peace. Talk soon.